The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jimmy, JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime. It's World Daily. We are one quarter final in. Three more to go. Hardly a classic yesterday, but talking points nonetheless.
That's
Amy Walsh
sure.
is with us. There's Craig Forrest. We have Dan Wong, Jimmy Brandon. I'm James Sharman. So you agree with that, Craig? France 2, Morocco 0. Which part did you agree? The non-classic or the things to talk about part?
The non-classic.
Is that Morocco's fault?
I would have preferred Morocco to have a go. They didn't really have a go.
Yes.
It was like they were waiting for the inevitable.
Wasn't it frustrating? I mean, we know how good Morocco is. We've been pumping this team's tires all World Cup. These guys could win it, you know? They can not with that mindset. I know you're playing France, who are obviously the heir incumbents to Argentina, maybe the best team in world football, but you got to try and win it. They didn't get outside their own half in the first half. Just passing the ball, all the possession, just passing the ball around. Da-da-da-da-da, look at us. We're technically good footballers with no ambition whatsoever.
That's true.
That's what it felt like.
Yeah, they went out with a whimper.
Oh, it was. I was saying, could it be a Spain-Portugal match? I think it was worse. Right? Let's put those two up. Which one would you, Dubs, you did your face, your poker face.
I always
face.
Do a face. I know.
Which
it's
one,
a problem.
Which one annoyed you more? Or which one did you go, oh, that was less watchable or more watchable than the others?
I think Spain-Portugal was less watchable somehow, because I think the second half of Morocco-France redeemed itself in a certain regard. But I think I agree with that. I think that France are inevitable in the way, you know, that you see Mbappe, like Messi, can miss a pen. And I want to ask Forrest about this stuttering business, because I hate it. And it's proving that it's not a good tactic for penalties. But I just think if it's not going to be Mbappe with an absolutely beautiful curler to that far post, it's going to be Dembele, or it's going to be Elise pulling the strings and creating the space and driving the attack. And I really would have liked to have seen it a little bit more wide open. But I guess when you get into knockout rounds, you get into the final eight, there's going to be a certain amount of caginess. There's going to be a certain amount of tactics that might be impeding free-flowing football because it favors the underdog, as it were. And let's be honest, anybody who's going up against France at this point is an underdog. So Morocco are a very, very good side. And Bono is a fantastic goalkeeper.
And singer.
As he proved. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So with or without him, they were maybe going to move on.
I can't believe the news today.
The English army won the war.
That's the Beatles. That's not you two.
No, you're right.
But yeah, I agree with that Sunday, because right? Yeah. I think, yeah. But I think that...
They stole the line. Sorry. They stole the line from the Beatles. I just realized, Bono, a great song, but you stole the line from the Beatles.
Didn't everybody...
Yeah, I guess so.
Everybody's just recycling stuff at this point, right? And repurposing it.
We are on this podcast.
We are on this podcast, and you could argue that modern footballers are as well. But I do agree with Craigor that I maybe would have liked to have seen it a little bit more open, a little bit more kind of let's just see what we got. Let's just see how we stack up. You know, but it wasn't ever going to be that. So I think France move on predictably. Mbappe's icing his ankle after just sort of he didn't collapse, but he just sat down on the turf and needed that sub. So maybe that was planned in a certain regard, and he's just letting Deschamps know that it was time to sub me off. But they move on, and then now I think this is 2018, and then 2022, and then 2026 again, and they're on to the semifinals. And I think the only two other teams to do that are, let me check my stats. Who did that?
I'm going to say
Germany. No, I've got it right here. Hang on a second.
Someone's not prepared.
I know. Germany and Brazil.
Ah, there you go.
Three straight semifinals.
Mbappe was being physically assaulted, though, Jimmy, wasn't he? He wasn't being bullied. And that's kind of, take me off. I don't need this right now. We're up 2-0. Come on, Gaff. I've got a big game coming up in 4 days' time. These guys just want to hurt me right now. I kind of get it.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's such a threat, isn't he? And you can't stop him. Other ways, you got to try to kick the guy and slow him down. But obviously, that didn't even work. He's so quick when he gets going off the mark. It's ridiculous. He's such a good player. I can see why he's world class and how he can change games. I mean, that's part of the reason why you get into him and you kick him, try to slow him down, maybe give him a little niggle where he can't, you know, hit the strides that he wants to hit. But, you know, even the goal was just amazing. Just half a yard, wraps it around the guy and puts it in the back of the net. Just shows you his class. And I love that goal because even when he just comes on his right, the defender just kind of gets narrow trying to block it. And as he wraps it around, you just see the defender just turn, watch the ball go into the net. And he's more or less going, how the hell did that just go in? Like, this guy had not much space, but was able to wrap it into that bottom corner. It's crazy.
Great little assist from Douay on that as well, eh?
Yeah.
Brings the ball down, just dinks it through the defender's legs.
Yeah. So they're so good. I mean, you know, going into a match, you need to look, if we were lining up against France, we'd be thinking the same thing. Like, how do we contain these guys? Can we go toe-to-toe with them? You know, it's like a middleweight fighting a heavyweight. You know, you can try to punch them as much as you want. You can do whatever. But at the end of the day, they've just got so much firepower all across the park. And even the subs that come on are just world-class. They've got they're the team to beat. We said at the beginning, this team is going to win the World Cup.
Well, so Jimmy, let me ask you this.
How do you go toe-to-toe with them?
Jimmy, so obviously a beautiful day for France, but does Deschamps look at Mbappe and say, we could do it with or without you? Or, I'm just trying to slide in as many U2 songs as possible.
Or does he start thinking and say, I'm rattling humming. I've got the desire.
That's a good one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they play on the edge, you know?
So. Yeah. So the streets have no names.
Yeah. Now we're just shouting out song titles.
There's no connection to the now.
No.
Joshua Tree. Electronica.
When love comes to town. Come on.
All right, sorry. Yeah. But I mean, Jimmy, as a football coach, as a pragmatic football coach, do you understand Morocco's tactics, or were they too negative?
I don't think they were too negative. It's just that's the way the game kind of went. I mean, like I said, you know, how do you go toe to toe with them when you can't keep up with their pace, their tempo, their movement? Their movement's brilliant. You just saw two different classes of teams that were playing. Yeah, we always said Morocco's a very good side. They're a team that can go quite far. But you're playing against a team that's a different level. Different level. And you've got to think that your tactics do kind of change a little bit, and where you're kind of like, okay, maybe do we drop off a little bit? We can't. Morocco did have some good possession at times, but you know, were they productive in it and trying to get into the final third? And no, they weren't. And it was a tough game. And I think anybody that you watched played against France was always found it difficult playing against these guys. They're just so clinical. You know, imagine you working your ass off for, you know, 60 minutes and thinking, okay, we're in this game. And all of a sudden a little bit of magic and balls in the back of the net. And you're thinking, there's the difference right there. They got someone that can just get it, wrap it around, somebody put it in the corner and go, game over. See you later, guys. Get off the park.
This message is brought to you by Tim Hortons at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
Introducing Tim's Taste of the Globe, a limited time squad of globally inspired Timbits and iced cap flavors.
And trust us, this lineup came to play.
We're talking a Brazilian lime cheesecake Timbit,
a French chocolate creme brulee Timbit,
an Italian cappuccino Timbit,
and a Canadian fireworks Timbit,
plus a Mexican caramel churro ice cap that absolutely deserves a chant.
It's game on at Tim's with the new Timbits and ice cap flavors from around the globe.
Try them all today.
I will.
I know you will. Now back to the show.
The toughest competitions in the world is the Champions League, and very few international teams are built like a Champions League side. Yeah. And France are.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, every single one of their players is at the top of every single league and Champions League. Paris Saint-Germain, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Milan, Roma, Bayern Munich at the back, Arsenal and Villa, Barcelona, goalkeepers from Milan. Like,
ridiculous. Turkey can't get an aside, right? No.
Yeah,
exactly. Think about that.
Yeah.
I mean, their bench is almost more impressive than their starting 11 because it's their bench. Right?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, okay, 11, okay, world class, but oh my God, look at the bench. It's world class.
If their bench was a national team, those two would be in the final.
Probably. That's a case he made, though, right? Absolutely.
Right. It could be a U2 B-side. Yeah. but I think what I was most disappointed in for Morocco, and maybe disappointment is a little bit harsh, because I felt like they were a shadow of themselves when they're at their best, and it's because they were missing the focal point in Sabari. I think you really saw that, where in the first half, it seemed to work, where they were sitting deep, they were really well organized, they were able to kind of a 4-5-1 or like a 4-4-2, depending where you're looking at it, like if it was middle third or sitting really deep in that low block, helping on the flanks and neutralizing what France had. And I mean, that was a little bit of the reason why it was a little bit of a snoozer, because defensively they were very good. They were thwarting France. But the idea then is you sit deep, you soak up the pressure, and then you break. But they didn't really have that threat. Like, I mean, yeah, they had Diaz, they had El Canous, but without Sabari, I think you didn't have what needed to be your kind of trump card or the ace up your sleeve, is that you sit deep, you soak up the pressure, then you go quick on the break and try to surprise the opponent, but they didn't really have that threat on the counterattack. So it was always going to fall flat if you're Morocco.
Yeah. Do you know, like when you think about it as well, like Morocco's definitely in there thinking, okay, let's contain them. Let's not make any mistakes. Let's be organized. Let's stay in this game as long as we can. And hopefully something starts to swing our way a little bit. The last thing you want to do is concede, because now all of a sudden you've got to go for it and you're open.
Yeah.
And once you're open against France, you're done. You are finished. They will punish you. Mm-hmm. You know, so you can see Morocco, and I understand it. I think any team that's playing against them in the world is kind of just stay in this as long as you can.
I think we also probably overrated Morocco a little bit. And that's not to say they're not a really great team and a team that can go to semifinals in the future. Of course they can. It's a emerging force in world football, no doubt. But look at their World Cup, right? So they played Brazil in that first game, 1-1, remember? Looked really good. Mm-hmm. But it was Brazil still, and Brazil clearly not at the top of their powers. But 1-1. They beat Scotland 1-0.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, nothing. People are like, don't be an arsehole to Scotland.
Hold on a minute, man. Hold on a minute.
But not exactly a convincing display. Not convincing, right? They beat Haiti 4-2. Okay, well, they should beat Haiti 4-2. The Dutch game, resilience on penalties. They beat the Dutch. Their first major win in this tournament.
I love gold. Sorry.
They were honestly, they were poor against Canada until they had to be good. That first half was maybe their worst half of the entire tournament. And then they didn't really show up with enough aggression against Brazil. There's an argument to be made they disappointed this World Cup.
Yeah, or that they underperformed.
That's the standards they've set. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. But I think the phrase you just uttered is only saved for like your tier one teams in the world. They were bad until they had to be good. Mm. Wouldn't it be great if we could say that about Canada? We're not there yet.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
You can't really flip that switch yet.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. The Sabari loss was big, right? And they haven't got, they're not a point, they're very, very good, but they're not the France, Spain level because they can't replace Sabari, who, by the way, most people just discovered during this World Cup. Let's be honest. Mm-hmm. Oh, he plays at PSV? Oh, he's going to Bayern Munich. Oh, that. Most people didn't know who he was before the tournament started.
Yeah.
Until you start digging around and seeing the rumor mill. Well, Bayern's interested. Must be a good player then, right? That's where we're at here. Mm. A lot of people frantically doing this, doing the World Cup, and then pretending they know all about this guy, including me.
Mm. And Charms, I'm just going to say this match analysis is brought to you by Tim Hortons, our World Cup watch Canada.
Because
it's
you
game
Canada
on with
there.
Tim's. Yeah, it's game on with
Tim's. I was just ripping into Canada's depth there.
Bring in the sponsor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But going back to Jimmy and Dub's analysis, I was thinking Jimmy used boxing. I was waiting for a counterpunch from Morocco. And you used the word counterattack. Same thing. But I was thinking the whole match, when are they going to try something? Just try anything. And other than a wide, long ball to the left, that's all. Like, they weren't doing anything offensive. It seemed like, hey, we're going to take our shot, but their main player, who's their leading scorer, wasn't playing, and they didn't have a chance to take even a good shot. I mean, there was very little firepower on the field that day, mm-hmm. or yesterday.
But the future's still bright, let's be honest. I mean, they're going to semi-final and a quarter-final, last two World Cups, pretty decent. They have a kid like Bouadi is going to be an absolute mega star, I think.
Agreed.
This is not to rip into Morocco, who did themselves proud, but they set the bar so high that that's the only reason we're kind of questioning them. And they lost to France. Okay. There might be a few teams that have lost to France by the end of this World Cup. Will one of them be Spain or Belgium or England or Norway? That's the question. Mm-hmm. Spain, Belgium later today. Craig, Spain favorites. Belgium beat an appallingly bad US team. I'm not quite sure what Belgium is just yet. Have they got it within them to beat Spain, who we know are going to turn up today and probably put in that signature performance? You just know it, right?
Yeah, it'll be interesting for sure. And Belgium plays somewhere in the level that they played against the U.S. I'm not sure you could argue that the U.S. were that bad, but they played a really strong game. And if they do the same and they close down that space and they get at Spain and don't restrict them the space to pass through the channels, they've got a chance. Now, they've lost, I believe, 6 in a row to Spain, Belgium. So it's going to be a difficult one. And they're not their golden generation, but they're also – because they are the underdogs, I think that's almost give them a little bit more inspiration, certainly, and maybe to pull something off here that's really big. They have nothing to lose. They are the underdogs, and Rudy Garcia, the manager, has even talked about that. So, you know, maybe being not the favorites and the number one in the world like they were 4 years ago is actually better for them. De Catalera up top, I mean, he started to click in the last game. He's been non-existent for the most of this tournament. But if they get him performing and with their midfield that they have, and also the rested Kevin De Bruyne, I mean, how is he going to play a part? I mean, he's had some time off, so that puts him in a pretty good position too. And we were talking yesterday about the importance of squad and being able to use them throughout the tournament. Rudy Garcia's done a pretty good job with that. So they're in a good spot, I think, to upset Spain, but it's going to be a difficult task, as we know.
I wonder with Spain, Jimmy, you know, we keep waiting for them to wake up at this World Cup because we've seen them do it numerous World Cups, not looking great, then suddenly click, switch, champions. I mean, there is a story here that they don't actually switch on and they do lose, and it turns out they had a disappointing World Cup. What do you expect today? Do you expect that switch to be hit?
Yes, I do. I do. I think with Spain, they're the type of team where they don't need to win 4-0. They're the type of team that know how to win a match 1-0, see the game out, because they can control the momentum, they control the rhythm of the game. And for me, I think they're so tactically aware of situations all over the park. I enjoy watching Spain. I enjoy the way that they play. I love Rodri and Pedri in the middle of the park. Just how they, the discipline, their movement, the understanding between the two of them, how they pin teams in, the pace that they have out wide. They want to get their wingers isolated 1v1 to take players on. Olmon, I think for me, is a brilliant, clever player. Just his movement, how he finds the little pockets and he can bring others into a match. I think, do they have another level? Yeah, I do think they have another level. And I think you'll see that today. I think they're so hard to beat, but they're also so hard to match 1v1. I love the way that they play. I think Belgium's going to find it very, very difficult. You know, they're the type of team, they can mix it up, but they have to. But I just love the dynamic that they have right now, because we always used to think Spain was all ticky-tacky, you know, but now they've got this ticky-tacky with explosiveness out wide that they never had before. So it's a different plan. It's like a mixture, a fusion of two kind of types of football that they're playing right now. And it's so controlled and organized that I can't see Belgium winning this match today. I just think Spain's too good, and I think they've got another level in them as well. And their fullbacks are fucking amazing. Oh, sorry.
Mark it.
It was an appropriate use of the word, though, because they are effing amazing.
Yeah.
But remember, the strength with Belgium, I think if they're going to do anything versus Spain, who have yet to concede a goal, all of the things that Jimmy just mentioned, they want to control the game, and they obviously have the personnel to be able to do that, whether it's this threat and the wings. I don't think we've seen the best of Yamin Yamal quite yet. He still looks like he's looking for his feet underneath him. We've seen like glimpses, but I mean, Jimmy alluded to it. Rodri and Pedri are not Tillman and Adams. So part of why Belgium found success versus the US is they beat them at their own game, but they also controlled the midfield. It's going to be very difficult to do that versus that duo in Spain. But that said, on the flanks, Trossard's created, I think, upwards of 17 chances in this World Cup. He's found a focal point in De Ketelaers, you know? And I think on the opposite side, I love Luca Bacchio. He's direct. He's physical. He goes at you. He wants to take on. That's going to be somebody who's set up to try to disrupt. And that's exactly what Belgium have to do if they want to find anything versus Spain. But they're going to be in tough to try to do that.
You mentioned those fullbacks. I mean, Jimmy, and they are effing amazing. But Cucurella and Porro, it's like that they are those players that suddenly grow an inch when they put on their national team shirt. Cucurella, we know he's a good player, and you know, at Chelsea over the years, he's had his moments, but also somewhat a criticized footballer there. Porro at Spurs, I mean, my God, I mean, he's been one of those shining lights, but it's been the Spurs team. What is it about certain players when they put that national shirt on? Is it the way they're used? Is it because the guys behind them, in front of them, beside them are just better than their club teams, that just elevates them to this higher standard?
Well, I think it's the way that you play too. I mean, you'd love to be a wing-back, full-back with a team that controls possession, and because that allows you to play higher. And then you feel confident as well that I got these guys in the middle of the park that aren't losing the ball. They're not losing it. So I don't have to sense danger as much as I have to if I'm playing with a different type of midfield or a different type of team that doesn't control the ball, because I'm hesitant sometimes to go forward, where these guys just, Porro and Cucurella, I mean, look, there's a reason why he's gone to Real Madrid.
I just realized that. I forgot about that. But
yeah, he's one of the best in the world by far. Yeah. He's one of the best. And I don't think and correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, you guys have been watching so much of this World Cup, that have you seen so many attacking fullbacks and scoring goals as much in this World Cup as you've ever seen before? Like, this is incredible. The fullbacks are actually like wingers and inverted wingers. They're just popping up. Munoz from Colombia, just banging goals for fun. You know,
it's a new game, right? They're kind of the cool new thing. Fullbacks used to be, they weren't. Now you're a fullbacker. We won't talk about you very much. And now it's like, no, these guys are superstars.
No, they are. You know, they're like drifters. They just drift from every position, just coming in, whether it's coming from out wide, or they end up joining the, you know, the midfield, or they join the attack. Just, it's almost like, just go. We'll leave the two center backs. We'll have a hold, the holding midfielder. The rest just go play.
Is it modern coaching and systems, Jimmy? I mean, compared to when you played fullback for a long time. Has the systems just changed?
Well, it's the tactical formations as well that they're playing. Like a lot of fullbacks would come inside and, you know, overload the middle. Where now it's like the fullbacks are get up into the box, but you come in a little bit late. And it's just the tactics now. And it's almost like just having a free player just going, go, you know, because we're going to allow our two center backs to stay, like I say, and have one holder just sit in front. So we'll defend with three, but the rest of you go play and go join the attack every opportunity you can. Because before it was more or less going, the left back goes, the right back, you tuck in. And now it's the left back goes, then you go on the weak side and you join the attack. So both of you just go. But as quick as you get forward, as quick as you got to get back. Because you find right away, as soon as the play breaks down, they're sprinting back like there's no tomorrow to get back into position. So I think it's just their fitness levels, their awareness to join the attack, and just having that little bit of freedom that a lot of times fullbacks never used to have.
That ability to get up and down that line is just, this is quite brilliant, really.
We've seen 100%. Mm-hmm. And they're all built the same, aren't they?
Yeah.
Right? When you go through all the fullbacks, they all look the same. Like,
yeah.
Just got this.
That's true, more so than any other position, right? Where you're seeing in modern football more of a variety of physical profiles that can play a similar role on the pitch. That's what I love about the modern game, is it's no longer like these big hulking presences. Okay, you're going to be either a center back or you're going to be a striker, and we're going to lump the ball into you, and then it's your job here as the big 6'3" person to thwart the attack and head it away, like you're saying, and everything in between, right? You're seeing any type of player, like a Cucurella could just as easily play, like that type of physical profile could just as easily play in the midfield, right? Mm-hmm. He's not necessarily reserved because of what he looks like. You have to play left back. It's not that anymore. And that's what I love about the game. But I wanted to ask Forrest, you covered this Belgium team when they beat the US, they kind of surprised them, and you were singing Castagna's praises.
Castagna.
Do you think he's equipped to deal with Spain and that left side and Cucurella making kind of ghosting into the box?
Well, the way he played against the US, basically taking out Robinson, I guess, right? And mm-hmm. Pulisic didn't get hard to get a touch. And his energy up and down the line was immense. So, yeah, he'll have to do the same again. But if he plays anywhere near he did against the U.S., it's going to be a difficult day for Spain. I thought he was absolutely top drawer on the day. That's the best I've seen Belgium, obviously. And then we saw them, we covered the Senegal game before. And right. Too, Belgium were poor for 85 minutes, decided to make a comeback and win it in added time, extra time. So they better not play like that, because if they do, they're going to be 3 or 4.
Right.
Can I quote Craig Forrest very quickly here from our last show, talking about the hunger and passion of a lot of these teams and nations, and then comparing it to the States and how Christian Pulisic went off with a boo-boo. That was a quote. Mm-hmm. Turns out he's got a broken leg.
Well, it's a bone bruise and a
microfracture. That's still a broken leg, okay? It's a microfracture.
No, you got to grind through it, don't you?
Yeah.
Suck it up. Suck it up.
He's out for weeks, apparently. Poor Christian Pulisic. He can't win, can he?
So it's a big boo-boo.
It's a big boo-boo, yeah.
He can't win because of the way it's framed in the U.S. They can't get out of their own way. He's seen as the next coming. He's not ever going to be that. So he's set up to fail no matter what happens.
He's a really good player, though, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, yes.
He's going to be seen as what he didn't accomplish, as opposed to appreciate for what he did accomplish, which is a Serie A player, fantastic footballer, who's sorry he's not Lionel Messi. Sorry. Not good enough. By the way, would a big boo-boo be called a yogi?
No. Yes.
Yeah.
Don't forget your picnic basket.
Such idiots. All right. So we get some comments here, Dubson. You got
Wait, just before that, I wanted a little story about Christian Pulisic. I was watching that poncho with the bald dad.
And you wear a poncho?
Yeah, a poncho. Yeah, that show where they go in. It's in Las Vegas, and his son was meeting with a client, and the client was trying to trade a Christian Pulisic kit from the American team. And this is probably like 7-8 years ago. But the comparison was, the guy goes, I know who he is. He's the soccer version of LeBron James. And I'm like, no, he is not the soccer version. Dear. But he's American, right? So back to the way Dubs talks about the framing. The best player, one of the best players ever to play basketball is LeBron James. Christian Pulisic is not one of the Mount Rushmore of the world soccer. He is on the Mount Rushmore of American soccer players, but that is a low, low number. So wherever he sits in this, hey, I'm going to carve out somewhere on your mountain a bust of your face, it's not there. It's not. And it's so, if anyone in the States is listening to us, if you are, we appreciate you.
Hello.
But this is...
Hi. No, howdy.
Yeah.
Hello, America.
This is not that. He is not the LeBron James of soccer. Just FYI.
No, because that would be Donald Trump.
He is.
No. Well, he was a great
After
athlete.
After you explained the red
guy. Yeah, he was. Could hit home runs.
What about that? That made me laugh. I was a great athlete.
Sure you were.
I know everything about sports. What's a red card?
But that wasn't a foul. Let's not go there.
Oh boy. No.
They have a reputation, don't they, of, you know, building their players up to a level that they just aren't. I mean, even going way back, Freddie Adu, you know, they built him up to be the next Pelé. Like,
it's great point guy. For us.
Yeah. Never stood a chance, did he?
Yeah, no.
Bellingham, he's not that player that they thought he was. Like, he's just
but that's okay.
Not.
He can still be a really good player, though.
He's a very good player, yeah. And by the way, class act, too.
Yeah.
He dealt with, seems that. Way, he dealt right? with all that pretty well.
Yeah. He did deal with it pretty well. I mean, right now, I mean, the Mount Rushmore of U.S. soccer, I mean, how many, is it four or five? How many people are on Mount Rushmore? How many presidents or founders?
Four, I think.
Yeah. So, Pulisic's there. I think it's probably number one, quite honestly. Who else did you put up there?
American.
Like, for being the best American players?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dempsey. I'd have Dempsey.
Dempsey's got to be up there, yeah.
Best rapper as well. Old Donovan. Yeah.
I would say McBride.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Brian McBride. Good call.
Yes, that's such a great shout.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What year was it when you got the elbow in the head and you were just bleeding profusely? Remember that one?
Yeah.
Oh, it's brutal. He was a great player. Mm-hmm. Tim Howard should be up there as well, quite honestly. Yeah. But you can't put goalkeepers up there, right, Greg?
Why not?
Tim Howard, Friedel, Keller.
Friedel too, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They're top quality goalkeepers. Top quality.
Yeah. Yeah, they had great goalkeepers.
Even Matt Fraser is a pretty good goalkeeper, despite what happened in the last match.
Yeah. Yeah, not a great
What goalkeeper. A howler that was.
See, I'm reading this goodness. Stuff. I'm sure you guys are too, though. You know, all the anti-American football sentiment from within the States, too. It is unfair because they are a really good team.
Totally unfair.
Who lost to a really better Belgium team. Okay, they didn't show up and they had to, whatever. We went into that before, but they're still a very good team that's only going to get better. And let's be honest, I mean, they're going to be hitting quarterfinals in the very near future on a regular basis, just purely from the spending, hey, Craig, and the amount of kids playing football down there. They will.
Yeah, and I think they're in a different place than obviously Canada, because this we are doing sort of a number of firsts for Canada. So we kind of give them some slack. But the Americans have been at this round of 16 so many times. And last time they were at the quarters, was it 2002?
Yep.
They're expecting more. They're expecting steps forward, and they're not seeing it. So there's some frustration there. And I think, you know, down the road, Canada could be in that position too. Like, if we're unsuccessful to get past that, like, what's going to be the next step? How are we going to get to that? And it's always going to be difficult for us. We just don't have a development system on nearly like the European teams mostly.
It'll be great, right? We get to a point in Canada where we can really genuinely disappoint at the World Cup. It'd be amazing.
I look forward to that time. But yeah. I think what the U.S. is lacking is we admire, and I always did, playing against the U.S. and playing for the national team for 10 years. They were the heavy hitters in world football in the women's game. I mean, there's a reason why they've won 4 World Cups, right? It's part of that investment. It's that pipeline. They produce great athletes, but they also produce really good footballers. But so I always admired that swagger. I always admire the bravado that they just seem to have. But the problem is everybody, like the entourage and the organization, the federation, is lacking a little bit of someone who's going to measure expectations. So the issue with Pulisic, the issue with the team, is they are not amongst the world's best, but they think they are. So you always have to enter into the match saying, this is a winnable match. We can do this. You need that as athletes, but you need everybody around you to understand that the reality of the thing is that we're not going to win the World Cup. You might not say that outwardly, but between the like pundits, between the journalists, between the USSF, like the reality is this team was never going to win the World Cup. So it's that gulf between the expectations and the reality of where this team is.
Yeah, 100%, which has always been the case.
It's a gulf of America, really.
Yeah. It's the gulf of Belgium now, actually.
Yeah.
Someone was saying that there's talk of that Belgium is trying to develop a nuclear weapon. And it's a grave concern.
It's like, pronounced nuclear.
Nuclear. Nuclear.
All right, comments.
Comments. So this is a little bit long, but it's worth it because it goes through all three CONCACAF teams and how everybody did versus expectations of each country for the team. So this is 842JD on YouTube. They said, I get why you'd say Mexico should be the most disappointed because they were minutes away from the quarters, but being the closest doesn't automatically mean they should be the most disappointed. Mexico exceeded a lot of people's expectations, won a knockout game, and pushed England all the way in one of the tournament's most competitive round of 16 matches. They fought until the final whistle and left the tournament with respect from many neutral fans. And it continues. The U.S., on the other hand, entered with huge expectations, to my point, as a co-host, and was beaten convincingly by Belgium. Mexico fought until the very end against one of the tournament favorites. The U.S. never really put Belgium under that same level of sustained pressure. If disappointment is about falling short of expectations and the overall performance, there's a strong argument that the U.S. has more reason to be disappointed. And I'll just end with this little paragraph on Canada. Canada had reason to be proud simply for reaching the round of 16, which many viewed as progress for their program.
That's an altogether too rational comment from a listener.
And there were many. And there's some hot takes on our comments, but a lot of people are tuning in and contributing their comments and their opinions and their thoughts. And we really appreciate it. And it aligns with what we're saying, or it contradicts some of the things we're saying, but it's very measured and reasonable. So thank you.
And Dubs, you said yesterday the reason why you thought Mexico, and I'm paraphrasing you, so please, but it was because they'd kind of rounded into form and they were playing well. But if we were looking at the results from, hey, moving into this tournament, it's not like they were world beaters, right? They weren't crushing everyone. But it's because they were rounding into form and they put up such an amazing fight, gallant, as it were. I was waiting to see if there's a U2 word, a U2 song with gallant in it.
But, I wouldn't say gallant in the Wong. I wouldn't say gallant. Gallant suggests a smaller team playing above itself. Mexico's a proper team who should be expected.
No, gallant is just more of gallantry is more of an effort that is equal to who you should be and where you stand in the world. I think.
No, to me, it's a condescending word. Oh, that's just a gallant effort. Like, oh, what? You didn't expect it from me?
I think we're going to have to look up what gallant means and how you've been using it all these years.
Well, like, you know,
that guy's gallant.
No, gallantry, like...
It's a football term as well. They use it all the time. It's a gallant effort.
Yeah.
It's condescending, though, in that case, from a footballing standpoint.
Is it?
What do you think? I think so. Wouldn't you say, Jimmy? They tried, but it wasn't quite enough.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. But my point is, I think back to Mexico and where they stood pre-World Cup, once again, everyone finished exactly where they were supposed to. And if you're going to meet, you know, kind of like, hey, if we were tomorrow, tomorrow when we're discussing this, if Spain has beaten Belgium, we'll all be saying that semifinal could be a final, right? We literally will be saying that France and Spain, that semifinal. Sometimes the bracket lines up the way it lines up. And Mexico, England, one of the best matches that we've seen, like that whole 100 and, like, I think it was like 12 minutes of extra time added and all that. It was a brilliant match. Exciting to watch. Pardon?
Added time, stoppage time, injury time, but not extra time. Because that's
it was a gallant effort, Wunga. It's a gallant effort.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can really I tell you the definition of gallant? So this is Merriam-Webster. One is showy in dress or bearing, right?
That's exactly what I meant.
Right? Splendid or stately, spirited or brave, nobly chivalrous, and often self-sacrificing. Oh. So I think that it was appropriate.
Noble, self-sacrifice.
Webster, whoever she is.
Take your definition and stuff it, Miriam.
I know her brother, Steve. Steve Webster.
Terrible. Can't write with hell. Terrible writer. Can't spell for the where are we going? That comment though. Sorry, yes, Dubs, you take over because I don't know where I'm going.
No, it's okay. I just wanted to again play into this CONCACAF kind of power rankings, as it were, evaluating each of the co-hosts' performance because they're all out of the World Cup, right? So Mr. Nice and Smooth, again, this is from YouTube, said, truth is Canada may be entering the capital middle power zone of the soccer hierarchy, and we might be here for a while before we become a nation that regularly makes it to the quarterfinals. Honestly, considering where we were prior to 2022, not even qualifying, I am okay if we are a round of 16 team for a while.
Yeah, I mean, it's balanced. I think it makes sense. Mm-hmm. We're in that middle. I'd love to be, I mean, when was last time Canada's in that middle power echelon? And never.
No.
That's making strides, but it's also understanding, I think, as Canadians, whether you're fans, pundits, or the organization or the federation, understanding where you are. And that's something that we have over our neighbors to the south.
Yeah. Yeah. We are more measured ourselves in the comments, as opposed to the USA will be very hot taking in the comments.
Well, we're very realistic.
I think that's what
we are compared to them.
Sometimes a bit of bravado is okay, though.
Well, that's it.
Right. There's you don't want to be just like complacent. Ah, well, we're happy here. It's okay. We don't mind a round of 16 and every now and again a quarterfinal. It's okay. We should be like, you know,
Yogi.
Hey, Yogi. Hey, Yogi. Hey, Yogi.
We'll get there eventually.
We'll get there. Yeah. Yeah. Listen, Jesse Marsh isn't that guy, right? He isn't going to be Yogi Bear, is he? Or even he's more Yogi Berra than Yogi Bear, isn't he?
That's true.
Right?
Yes.
Great quotes. God, I'm on fire today. I'm on fire.
That's true.
No, that's a very Wonger thing that you just did. You acknowledged the greatness and you killed it.
I got it from Jimmy Brennan, Pat pointing at his own name on when he scores.
Yeah, Canada does need more of that.
Someone sent a role, TFC role recently to us, and it was Jimmy role.
Oh, Dave DiCola did. Yeah.
Jimmy Roll.
That amazing goal you scored. I think it was in the Canadian Championship? That beauty you scored from the left-hand side. You belted it from a long way out. Do you remember that goal? Oh, we should look it up again. We should play
Jimmy
it.
Remembers every goal.
Yeah,
there's only like eight of them.
Do you know the one, Jimmy, though? Oh, I should give a better description because I haven't seen it. Dave DDC sent it to us.
I don't know. Anyway,
that's not important for this conversation.
I'm going to have to shoot, guys. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Shoot.
Feel better. Feel better.
Bye, Stacks.
Thanks, pal. It's crazy.
Love you guys.
Is Craig not feeling well?
Love you.
Yeah, Craiger has the Dubs and I were talking with him. He has the, you go nonstop for a month.
Oh.
Lying across. You're about to get sick. You're in the same boat. You're about to get a cold very soon.
I know. It's on its way.
Is it?
No,
I'm just.
No, it's not actually. No, I feel good actually. Okay. I felt really tired the last couple of days, but I feel much better today. I got a 76 sleep score according to my ring. So therefore,
oh, nice.
I purely judge myself from what it tells me, not how I feel. So we'll go with that. More comments.
More comments. Okay, this isn't really to do with the opponent today. Maybe tomorrow, as we get two quarterfinal clashes, right? One of them being Switzerland versus Argentina. So this is from Gary Barone 8102. Great show today. Funny, informative. I was thinking about the final eight. The only team left that even played a single game in Canada is Switzerland. Nobody else was, quote unquote, allowed to wander across the border. Switzerland played three games in Vancouver. So does this make Switzerland Canada's team now? I think so. Go Switzerland. So
yeah, I
Canadian
said that.
Fans, are did you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Are looking for somebody to support.
I think it's in Sportsnet with Craig actually played yesterday. I said the same thing. That should be our team. And they wear red.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why not? They played more minutes in home soil in the last 6 months than Canada has.
Yeah, I think I saw somewhere it was like projected 11s, maybe looking at the Swiss team versus Argentina. And then it was the Swiss team with obviously the Swiss flag. And somebody's comment was like, oh my God, look at all the injuries they have. Because it was all the crosses. Their whole entire lineup is hurt.
Still finding a way. I get it. We're laughing.
I was thinking yesterday, the Morocco-France game, the fans like were all kitted out in all the craziest outfits. And I was thinking, if you went to Dollarama the first week of January, you could kit yourself out with the craziest Christmas, old Christmas stuff if you're a Moroccan fan. You'd be set. You could set that entire country up with like big hats and, you know, cat in the hat ties and all. It was brilliant. It's like
the French too, right? The French are great. The fans are great at costumes as well. They're one of those teams. They'll wear the typical French guy, you know, the moustache and the berets and that.
Right.
Yes, the striped T-shirt.
The character like almost should be offended by that, actually. You know,
it's excuse just me, sir. You can't bring your baguette in here.
The mines.
All the pantomimes.
Jimmy's pretty good at that.
He is actually
just so everybody knows, Jimmy's doing the man in the glass box miming.
Yeah. Still, I've told this story before, but my favorite story ever is my friend Steve coming out of the Brunswick house about 2 a.m. one morning, and there's a mime outside begging for change. Not begging, but he's doing mimery stuff.
Performing for change. Yeah.
There you go. And there's a hat full of change. My friend Steve staggers out blind drunk and just hoops the hat all over the place, change everywhere. And then the mime suddenly started feeding him punches. That's not very mimey at all. So funny.
Oh boy.
He
got beat up by a mime.
Actually, like punches. Fake punches. did he get all indignant? He's like, hey, those are real punches.
Yeah, wait a minute. That hurt.
I thought you were in a box.
All this time, you've been living a lie to us drunken patrons.
Everybody takes back their money out of the hat.
Where the hell are we? I'm talking about
more comments.
Then. Oh, thank God.
Okay, so this is from Cryops. I know, I saw you, Sharms. So Cryops, this is Canada specific. So maybe we'll start with Jimmy here, okay? So Jimmy, pay attention. Curious about the following. One, does Marsh have relationships he needs to mend with players like Jebison, perhaps Laren, St. Clair, and Saliba? Two, how soon does Owen Goodman get his first start for Canada? Three, how quickly does Canada recruit dual nationals for 2030? And four, how will Marsh develop and implement players like Elijah Roche, Sergei Kozlovsky, and Shola Jimmo onto the team? So why don't we start with number one, Jimmy. Does Marsh have relationships that he needs to mend with players that maybe weren't used or were left off the roster altogether?
No, I don't think he has to mend anything. You know, you're the manager. You make the decision. And the decision is final. You know, every player has every opportunity to give everything that they got to get selected. But at the end of the day, it's the manager that picks the team. And if he doesn't pick you because he believes that certain other players are in a prime position and that can get a job done that he's looking to get done, then you got to accept his decision. Just him alone selecting you to be in that squad with that national team means that he values you. And I don't think now, again, you have to mend any relationships. You know, it's players know that. You're the manager, you're the boss, you pick the team. And either you pick me or you don't, but I'm still a part of this team. I'm still within this squad, and I'm going to play a role at some capacity. So for me, I don't think there's anything that he needs to fix. And even if a manager doesn't select you, that's his decision. You know, it doesn't mean that you hate the guy now and you don't like him. And, you know, sometimes you do that as a player. You're like, you know, you're not happy with his decisions. I was about to swear there, but
you're not, well you're not done. Happy. Good restraint.
You're not happy with his decisions, but at the end of the day, that's what he gets paid for. He's the boss, and you got to accept it. So, no, I don't think so. I think everybody understands and respects Jesse. And if you're unhappy at not being selected, that means that you care because you want to be there. And okay. Of course, frustration will set in. It happens to all of us. You know, if I didn't get selected, I'm fuming. I'm mad because I want to play. But at the end of the day, I've got to respect his decision. Mm.
Charms, what do you think about Jebison in particular? Like, that's got to be a really tough pill to swallow, right? Yeah. Given all the injuries in the back line, obviously we knew that Jesse Marsh had to manage that, right? So if he had any extra bodies, it was going to be a defender, right? But Jebison is just cut loose following Charlotte and not much more discussion about him. So do you think that his future is in doubt with the national team, or come the next camp, he's right back in the fold?
No, on the contrary, I think given what we saw at the World Cup, he's probably in a pretty good spot
internationally
because that no one said, that's my job, not even John David, quite honestly. Mm. So Jebison's a young guy still. He's very new to the program. He's got a massive season coming up for himself. There's no bridge needing to be built there between coach and it's 26 men squad, right? And like I said, there were so many injuries at the back, you had to cover yourself. So that's why he took 4 strikers, not 5. I'm sure he'd love to have taken 5 strikers.
Yeah.
But he couldn't. That's a numbers game, right? And Jebison knows that. He'll get his chance.
Listen, every manager would love to take as many forwards as he can. Always. But unfortunately, you know, this situation made it difficult for him. He couldn't bring as many strikers as he liked because he had to worry about the back. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate.
What do we think about the goalkeeping position? So Owen Goodman, I think like when he showed, you know, that he really wanted to be a part of this Canadian squad, like he did a lot of work himself to make sure that he got it over the line back in November, whenever it was that it was official, that he could then be eligible to play for Canada. It was probably part of the deal that was brokered between he and Jesse Marsh that he would be part of this World Cup squad, even though we never saw the pitch or would never see the pitch, that it was always going to be a battle between St. Clair and Crépeau. Do we think that he's like next player up? Like, do we think that that's over now, that it's a battle between St. Clair and Crépeau and Goodman is firmly in the mix now?
I think it's going to be different going into Nations League, which is what, September? Mm-hmm. September, October?
It's coming up.
Yeah, and it's, you know, who's going to be in form again? I mean, it's going to be, I hope it's not those conversations that we're going to have about goalkeepers for
please
next number of months. But who knows? I genuinely don't know. And with goalkeepers, is whoever's in form and whoever the manager likes, he's going to pick. So, you know, I'd like to see Goodman get in at some point. I want to see what he's all about, you know, playing on the national team.
Me too. Jesse, put him in
Jesse,
there.
Jesse created that kind of issue himself by saying 2 years ago, these are my top two guys. It's between them. Mm-hmm. He probably made a mistake. Now, in the end, Max did apart from one goal against Switzerland, he was great at the World Cup. It was a right choice. Jesse made the right choice. But I'm with you. It should be a meritocracy at this point. Owen Goodman's a really good keeper. I watched the first 15 minutes and towards the end, he'd be the guy, you know, in goal for the free kick practices and penalties and stuff, right? He's a really good goalkeeper.
Yeah.
He's a big boy. Very popular in the squad as well. So I think he should absolutely be in the mix, as should McGill, you know, wherever he is these days. He kind of disappeared out of nowhere.
Pantemis,
another example,
there's
right?
There's five of them.
This is a chance, a clean slate for Jesse Marsh now. Say, okay, you know, I know who my guys are, and Max is the favorite because he was the World Cup goalkeeper, and he's still not too old, and he did nothing wrong. You've got to beat him out, but if you beat him out, good for you. The race is on. And Max, any other team in the world.
Yeah, Max was just named MLS All-Star Team with all those goals scored against him.
Was he really?
Yes.
Yes, he was.
Yes. Richie, also Richie Larea from TFC.
How's I mean, nothing gets Max, but and he's made some huge saves, but he's given, I think with the stats here, how many games in the season so
you
far?
Put a highlight reel together like you're getting recruited.
77?
Yeah.
But he's Raymond Bork, that's a lot of goals.
Yeah. But nice.
But he's had 395 saves, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's your ratio, right? Because he's seen so many GD shots.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got to write that down. GD, right?
Come on, no. Son of a biscuit box. That's what my dad used to say.
What about the kids there, Dubs? Do you think you talk about the kids there?
I think we put that to Jimmy.
Yeah. What's that?
So some of the players at the end of the question, if you were listening, like when we think about the camp poutines, which is part of, I think, Marsh's mandate and what he's done very well is growing the player pool and giving younger kids or players who otherwise wouldn't be part of a roster for, say, a tournament or even like friendlies as part of a window where you run these January camps and you give players a sense of the standard. You give players a sense of the environment. So a player like Roche, Kozlovsky, Shola Jimmo, and others, right? There's Matteo De Bruyne. There's tons of players who are, I think, just on the cusp of breaking in but need a little bit more time. So how soon do you integrate them into the fold?
Well, if there's exceptional talents and they're ready to play at that level, then yeah, you've got to bring them in. I mean, Jesse's going to be working with the Olympic team now, the under 20s. He's going to be working very closely with them, which is good because then, you know, his identity and his philosophy is going to be used with the younger age groups. So they're going to have an understanding of how we need to play and what's expected. And so when they do make that jump, it's going to be an easy transition for them. It's not, they're just in the deep water now going, okay, off you go, swim kid, good luck. They're going to have an idea of how they want to play. So, you know, if I look at Shola Jimmo and Kozlovsky, are they ready for that international level? No, they're not. Are they young, talented players? Yes, absolutely. But they still need a lot of time and they need to be playing at a very high level in order to get into this national team.
Yeah, there's some good kids. I mean, Elijah Roche is in Austria, isn't he? I think right now. I think he's playing in Austria. Like, yeah, is it Sturm Graz? I think it's Sturm Graz. He's
in Austria. Sure, yeah.
But yeah, there's this kid. And, you know, like I said before, I said last show, the CONCACAF U20s is later this month. How much fun is that going to be to watch now? And the numbers they're going to get, I'm assuming it's on one soccer, actually, yeah. That's good for them. Because I, representing the average fan, say, I want to watch that now. Mm-hmm. That being said, Canada's team right now, Jimmy, Dubs, it's a young squad still. Most of those players are still going to be in their prime in 4 years' time. So it's great. There's going to be a battle, but I don't think any of those players you've mentioned there at this point are ready to take away a spot. I don't think anyone in that squad.
No.
Right?
No.
No, but part of seeing success in any national team program, and we've spoken about this over on the broadcast, and for anybody who is eager for some NSL news, there have been some massive signings in the league. There's been an injection from an agency called Apex of $30 million for the growth of this league now. So there's lots of big news happening. So we chat all about it over in the broadcast. But part of what Casey Stoney needs to do, and this is also kind of a holdover from what Bev Priestman did, is that there was very little push from players, you know, like, so that if you were a mainstay with a national team, you're almost guaranteed a spot. And once that complacency sneaks in, you're almost cooked. So you need to have the push from the youth national teams. Yes, it helps if they're aligned with the playing style and they understand what's expected of them once they come into a senior national team camp, but you always have to have that turnover or at least the promise of a player who's pushing. So you have a doubling up of positions and then you look down the depth chart and you have players who are 16, 17, 18 who are knocking on the door, and the players who are called into camp, into the senior team, understand that. So that they're pushing their levels and their standards at their club setup, and they come into the national team camp and they know that nothing is a certainty. Nothing is a given. Nothing's guaranteed to them. And as soon as that is, you've almost already lost before you've even played the game, as it were.
Yeah, it's a great point. Cryops, by the way, could program our show. That was a great... It was an email or was a message? It was fantastic. Yeah, really good questions.
Yeah, it was a YouTube one. Yeah,
it was a YouTube, was it? Yeah, so we could definitely just...
Face cryops again.
Show by themselves. Yeah, again. Keep on coming, cryops, please. Listen, we're out of time. As Dubs mentioned there, the broadcast recorded yesterday. Check it out. It is 30 million. That's game changer for the NSL. That's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of that Apex money could filter down to sponsoring podcasts. Just saying. that's it. We're out of time. We're back same time, same place tomorrow. Enjoy the match today, everyone. Cheers for listening and watching if you watched it.
This is brought to you by
BetMGM.
Make it legendary.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Here's the goal.
What do we think? By Bosniak.
Columbus.
It's Brennan. Oh, that's a fine goal. Oh, that's a magnificent effort from the skipper, Jim Brennan. And may well they celebrate. That's got to have been all of 30 yards out.
It was 34,
and the first
Nigel.
Ever signing scores his first ever goal for Toronto FC. He must be delighted. They most certainly are. It's 2-2. It's a tie game. Jim Brennan, what a goal.
What a strike that is. For what, 30-something yards out. Hits it clean as O'Brien runs over the top of it. Jim Brennan absolutely laces it. It's shifting all over the place. The goalkeeper has a hard time picking up the flight of it, adjusting. No chance in the end, but from that distance out, you'd want to...
Whoa, yay. Craig Forrest on the call of Jimmy Brennan's worldie.
Worlds colliding. Also, how big were was the font used on your kit for your names? It was like half
It was massive. And it was heavy.
Brennan!
And it was the baggy shorts days too, right? Look how baggy everything was.
Yep. Yeah. So Jim Brennan.
What's Mo saying there? He's pointing to his head. Straight up.
Stay focused.
Stay focused. Don't get carried away, Brennan.
After a goal. Don't let your head swell, Brennan.
That was a good goal. That was a great goal, though. Well. Wow.